You tuned in to Relationship Factor, where we talk about all things relationships for millennials, moving you from a problem to solution, from functional to exceptional relationships. I'm your host, Kingsley Moyo. Hey, thanks again for downloading another episode of Relationship Factor. If we are not already connected, I hang out a lot on Instagram. Find me, the handle is Relationship Factor. Occasionally, they are dropping some relationship nuggets that'll pick you up and carry you throughout the week, and some helpful tips on how to build healthy relationships. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Janelle Jones. Dr. Janelle Jones is a licensed clinical social worker, founder of Melanin and Grace Publishing, LLC, a certified coach, international best-selling author, and a motivational speaker. In this conversation, Dr. Jones and I talk about what childhood trauma is, what it looks like, and how it shows up. We talk about how it actually appears in adult relationship, love relationships. We talk about how to identify this trauma and actually do the inner work to heal from this trauma so that you can have meaningful and satisfying relationships. Join me for this conversation. Childhood trauma. It's not something that we really talk about in the context of relationships. I mean, somebody will probably drop into a therapist's office to get counseling for childhood trauma. And probably maybe you may not even talk about the relationships that you have and how it's affected your relationship. Dr. Jones, talk to me. When we're talking about childhood trauma in the context of relationships, or just childhood trauma, what are we talking about?
Yeah. So really, let's take a deeper dive into what childhood trauma is and what it looks like. Because a lot of people, you know, as a clinician, I have a lot of clients who don't even understand that they've been through some type of childhood trauma. They almost normalize the situation. They identify that, you know, their family was dysfunctional, like we had some issues, but they don't really look at it as being a traumatic experience. So I want to talk to you more about what that looks like.
So we normalize it and thinking, yeah, my family was bad, but it wasn't as bad as yours. We embrace it and think it's okay. And then we don't realize that it affected us.
Absolutely. And we kind of like, yeah, my family was dysfunctional. Uncle such and such did this. He was an alcoholic. And, you know, my mom and dad argued and things like that, but they don't really identify it as being traumatic. So
okay,
what happens is, and we'll dig more into this as opposed to how it affects you in adulthood. What happened is a lot of times we have unhealed traumas that is really impacting us in our adulthood. So when we're dealing with traumas, we're talking about any childhood adverse experience. And these experiences can happen in many different forms, in many different ways. And what I mean by that is any type of like neglect or abuse. Abuse meaning physical, sexual, emotional, mental abuse, abandonment. All of that is kind of a childhood trauma, and it happens to us a lot, either indirectly or directly. The direct experiences, of course, are we're being abused, you know, in all those realms, physical, mental, emotional. That is a direct trauma. An indirect trauma is when it happens to us indirectly. I mean, so for instance, one of the things that I went through was an indirect trauma for me was it didn't happen specific to me, but it impacted my life. One thing was, well, two things were I lost my sister when I was 4 years old. My sister was murdered by her boyfriend. And then when I was 5 years old, the next year, my father was murdered by his father. So although, like, for instance, I wasn't murdered, it still impact those traumas still impacted my life.
Yeah. So it's heavy because you see it happening to somebody. It does something to your brain. It does something to your psyche. It does something to your whole being. Therefore, it's that trauma that's transferred towards you. It's interesting because you mentioned that some things we don't even think of trauma. And you mentioned that just being loved. Just being present, knowing that dad or mom is going to be there, or knowing that there's going to be food the adverse child experiences is huge, because sometimes we don't think of, oh, mommy left me crying. Ah, you'll grow up. You'll be okay. But we don't realize the impact of that when it happens over and over and over, what it does to you. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking childhood trauma.
And that's a good point. That's a good segue into like the studies that have shown the impact that childhood trauma has on the brain. So we're in this space where, again, we normalize it. It just happened and all of that, but we don't understand the impact that it's actually having on our brain. So a lot of times when children are in trauma, they're constantly in the flight or fight mode. And I know you heard of that. So they're constantly trying to figure out, you know, the fight or flight or the stressors that they use to deal with a situation. Either they're going to fight, they're going to face it head on very aggressively, or they're going to flight. They're going to run. They're going to avoid it. Right. And so this is what happens to the brains of children, because ultimately they're going through PTSD, right?
Right.
Post-traumatic right. stress syndrome. And so if they're constantly going through that cycle, mom, I don't got food. Cause now we're dealing with the Maslow hierarchy of basic needs, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have food. So I'm trying to figure out how to survive. So they're consistently trying to figure out, you know, where my next meal is going to come from. I don't want to upset dad, you know, when he comes home, because I don't want my mom getting abused or me getting abused, right? So then we put up these protective factors and we respond using the fight or flight measure in almost everything we do. It's about survival then. It's right. not, you know, you talked about being loved, like, oh, I want to be loved. You know, yeah, we want to be loved. But then when it comes to my basic needs not being met, I am going to survive. I am in survival mode and trying to figure out that. Exactly.
So you mentioned PTSD, because more often when we talk about PTSD, we're thinking of war veterans. I went to war and I saw something crazy out there, and we never really think of it as a childhood experience that, you know what, that was PTSD. So unpack that a little bit more, because some of them be saying, well, I haven't been to Afghanistan or Vietnam or something like that. So I ain't got no PTSD.
And that's, you know, we say in that, that's a really good way, because it's a stereotype, right? Mm-hmm. So we systematically think that the PTSD are those who've been in the army or military, you know, that's where we use it. But we don't look at it as children, you know, going through PTSD. And if you look at the definition or the word of it, it's post-traumatic. So we're talking about childhood trauma. Post-traumatic, right? So it's anything that happens after a traumatic event occurs. So children, when they're in this traumatic event, again, going back to any type of adversary experiences, when they're there, that leaves a mark on them and they're consistently responding, even until adulthood, which we'll get into later, to these traumatic events.
So it left a stamp on my life. It left a stamp on my childhood, and I'm going to continue. So it's like a seed was planted and it continues Absolutely. To grow into adulthood.
And it that's where we use our lenses. I call it the lens of perception, right? Our emotional lenses. That is what we use to deal with the world, right? When we're any experiences, good or bad, when we become adults, we use those experiences to look at the world. That's how we perceive the world. And we all know that our perception is our reality.
That's
so
right.
If I was in a traumatic experience, for instance, like I said, I had a whole bunch of traumatic experiences. Yeah. A lot of adversity. My mom was an alcoholic. Just a lot of things happening, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of things with me was I dealt with rejection issues a lot because I didn't feel emotionally cared for. My mom mm-hmm. wasn't there. She was, a lot of times, she had her own traumas. She lost a kid. You know, she had to bury her daughter.
She had a lot to deal with. Yeah.
She had a lot to deal with. So for her to cope with that, she used alcohol, right? That was her her therapy. And because of that, she wasn't.
So how does this shape your sense of self? Because this is a lot, like, for any child to carry. And now you can talk about different kind of people. And for even for some who think that, you know what, I had my mom and my dad at home. Yeah, we were okay. But still, there are some traumatic experiences. I mean, it's not either you have or you don't. It's a spectrum, right? Because some have the volume turned all up and some have the volume turn the little bit up. How does this shape your sense of self?
If a lot of times, in my opinion, if you're not dealing with the trauma, it causes deep insecurity because something was missing. And then what happens a lot of times when we become adults, we try to find that missing link. And it becomes an unhealthy missing link, right? Because we don't really truly understand our value and our worth. So we use these experiences to define us, right? And they shouldn't define us. Yes, these things happen to me, but it doesn't define who I am. So it's very important that you understand the difference between the two. So just because, you know, you make a mistake or something happens to you doesn't mean that you are a mistake, right? Mm. So that's what we do with our traumatic experiences. We impersonalize them, which, you know, understandably so, because it happened to us.
Right.
But what we do is we make that who we are, and that's not who we are. So then what happens to our personal self is those experiences of abandonment, rejection, you know, physical, mental, any abuse, that is who we become. We become the victims of those. So a lot of times our perception, and not everybody, depending on your healing process, our perception becomes the victim of our situations and circumstances as opposed to overcoming them.
So now you have all this baggage. You are in yep. your adult years. You're in college or something like that. And you bump into this cute girl or this handsome guy. That stuff is showing up. The inner child is still crying out.
Listen, the inner child is one of the things that we don't want to deal with. We think because we're grown and we're an adult-ish, you know, college, 23, 18, you know, we feel like the age, we should be okay, right? We
should
feel
be able like, to handle
okay, I'm 18 this. Now. Yeah. I'm cool. I got this, right?
At 18, you could say maybe, yeah, you're still. But when you begin to get to your 36, 35, and you feel like, okay, my relationships are not working out. I should be okay. I'm old enough to handle this, but still, it's not working out.
And then they forget a lot of times to heal the inner child. And you only go past the last place of healing. So if your trauma happened when you were five, you're going to remain five until you heal that trauma. The child. And a lot of people don't. Yeah, a lot of
temper
people
tantrums.
Just, yeah. Just rage, all anger. And here's the issue with like our society is when it comes to emotion, it's almost like we default to anger. So we don't say things like I'm disappointed or I'm hurt or, you know, we go, I'm mad. Right. And that's not really dealing with the root of the issue. And that's what happens. It's like if you look at a tree. And we all know what a tree looks like. And I'm not going to specify a tree. Just picture a tree. A lot of times when we see a tree, we see the trunk of the tree. We see the branches of the tree. And depending on what type of tree, we see the leaves, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, if you have a leaf or a branch that's dying, it's a root issue, right? Mm. And we're not dealing with the root of it. So underneath the trunk and the branches and all that is a whole line of roots that's trying to connect to some type of water source so it can keep nutrients in supply, right? But we don't see that part.
Right.
That's what trauma is. Like we're promiscuous or we're doing drugs or we're doing, you know, we're mistreating or we're narcissists and we're not really dealing with the root issue or the root causes of that.
So we're just coping. But the real thing though, Dr. Jones, is it's scary to go down there. It's a deep place where people don't want to go there. It's so if we don't go there, we don't heal.
You don't deal, you don't heal, right? You don't,
okay, so we don't heal. So it's something that we need to address. So okay, now how do I even find out that, you know what, this stuff keeps showing up, this abandonment, this rejection. Maybe how does childhood trauma tap into the attachment styles? Are they related? Do they connect? Is that connected somewhere in there?
Oh, yeah. So if I have because what happens is when we deal with childhood trauma, I'm sure that, or if you haven't heard of shadow work, oops, my light fell. If you haven't heard of shadow work, you know, that's when your shadow person comes up in a form of maybe aggression or hurt, victimization, and they kind of come in and protect those because you're triggered by something, right? Something happened to you and, you know, you're automatically triggered and then here comes the shadow person. trying to protect you because your dad didn't, your mom didn't, or the situations didn't. Again, you, like you said, it may not be a parental thing. It could be something outside the home. Whatever that is or whatever that was, you're triggered and then you begin to have this, like you say, a tantrum or emotion or something. And an example I'll give you, I am married to a blended family, right? So my husband has children and they stay out of state, but every time they would come, specifically his daughter would come for the holidays or whatever, I found myself really just acting weird. And he would go, what is wrong with you? And I found myself, I would like, close off. I would go into my room. I would try not to connect and I would get easily offended. I was very touchy. Like I acted like a kid. And so I really started to seek advice. Like, why am I acting this way? And it was revealed to me the reason why I was acting that way. Cause I did not have a father. I never had that relationship with my dad that I so desperately wanted. And so it made perfect sense. So what I tell people, clients, is that when you start tripping, you know, you just start acting out of character and you're going off, you know, you're upset because somebody is, you know, DMing him or the way it's looking, really begin to check yourself and then ask yourself, why am I acting this way? A lot of times you're being triggered, and triggers normally don't happen until something happened. And I tell people triggers are like, you know, the map in a mall where it says you are here. A lot of times we think we're okay, you know, we're moving through life and then we're triggered, then we kind of have this setback. Triggers remind us that we still have healing to do. It is not a bad thing to get triggered. You have to understand it's how you respond to those triggers, but it's one of them things where it shows you really where you are in the healing process. So if you're triggered and then you're just flying off the map and you're just, you know, cussing everybody out, then you need to look inwardly to see what you still need to heal.
So the triggers will come. Like,
oh, they will.
So it's like conflict. Triggers will come. It's not a matter of if, it's they will come. Now, so I want to begin the journey of healing. I'm dating this guy or this girl. Things are going cool, but seems to be off, and I seem to be moving from relationship to relationship. Where do I begin the inner healing? Where do I begin the healing process of trying to work through this? And maybe how do I even identify these things, how they show up in adulthood?
Yeah, the biggest thing is to start with, you know, I'm sure you heard this, is identifying the problem. If you're in a relationship and you're the common denominator and you're consistently having the same issues and you keep hearing the same things, you might be the problem. And if it's their fault. But if you're hearing the same things denominator. Over and over, absolutely. What you do with that is you don't victimize yourself and go, she tripping, he tripping. They don't know what they're talking about. I'm, you know what? I'm moving on to the next person. What you do is, okay, what is going on? Let me look at the things that I've heard frequently from people and analyze that. So then once you do that, you break that down, you look at the things that you commonly heard. Let's say people say, you know, you're selfish or, you know, you're inconsiderate. Those are things you want to go, why? And you mentioned the attachment. So, you know, people do the avoidance. So we have the secure is the I'm from a loving family. But then you have the avoidance, you have the fear avoidance, all of that, you have to watch what you do. So I'm getting close to this person, but I'm not giving them my all, right? Or I'm avoiding the conflict. I'm not really developing deep relationships with people. A lot of people become fearful of doing that because they don't want to be abandoned. They're afraid, you know, that they're going to be love someone and they're going to be rejected. You know, all of that is where you kind of look inside to say, what do I need to heal? The next thing you want to do after identifying the common issues and understanding what the problem is to begin to do the inner work.
So before you get into that inner work piece, so some of the cues that I need to pay attention to when I'm in my adult relationship is when I begin to feel the sense of feeling like I'm always being rejected, I'm always being abandoned. And when we're talking about attachment styles, we're talking about the avoidant, secure, disorganized, and the anxious. You can Google all that stuff. You'll find that. So if I see all of that showing up real strong, where It's scary to fall in love with somebody, or each time when I feel somebody's being too nice, I'm asking the question, why is he being too nice? Why is she being too nice? That's something to watch for, because somebody who sees something that's nice, or a gentleman or a lady, you would be attracted to that. But if you're pushing back on that, that's something to pay attention to. So you want to watch for all of those things and kind of trace them in your life to say, okay, has this shown up in my... So which means now I got to have a good friend. A good friend who can tell me, like can sit me down and be like, Kingsley, listen, bro, man, you bad. You always been doing this. Or talk to your girlfriend who's cool with you. Not somebody who's going to say, well, you're fine. It's them. You want somebody who's going to have a heart-to-heart conversation with you, who's going to talk with you, who understand to you. I don't know, maybe for somebody it's a friend or mom. Go talk to a therapist. I mean, if you're in Dr. Jones' state, find her. She's a therapist. She'll do the inner work for you and work with you. All right, so you figure that part. You now know. Now we're getting into the inner healing.
So the inner healing, like you said, can be tough, right? The inner healing, when you're going back a lot of times, it can re-traumatize you. Mm. You know, I know a lot of people who avoid, I'll ask, you know, what happened? And they go, I don't remember, because they have suppressed the incident or the issue. So the
memory fragmentation happens there.
Absolutely. So it's like, you know, subconsciously they know. Right, because our subconscious holds a lot of information, but consciously, I don't want to deal with that, because that means I have to go into a space of healing. And some of that could be you smell something that reminds you of the incident. You know, like I lost my mom recently. That was a traumatic event for me. And I felt like I smelled her perfume, and it made me sad. Right. I think it was just my air freshener, but whatever. It just made me think of my mom, and it made me sad. So those sensory issues, you know, cause you to go back and be re-traumatized. So that's why a lot of people go through the avoidance, because they don't want to feel those things again.
So but the brain truth is, the brain stores all of this information. It doesn't let go. Now, would it be true, Dr. Jones, if when you're having a conversation with somebody and they say, you know what, I don't even remember my elementary years, grade one, grade three, it's all a blur. I don't even remember anything. Would that be an indicator probably that there was some stuff there that the brain is suppressing?
I mean, unless you have really bad memory issues, that would be something that I would have to say you're probably suppressing it.
Something is there. Now you got to get in and do the inner healing, the hard work. Okay, talk to me about that. What does that look like?
So the inner healing does require you to go back. One of the things I teach is really identifying those things and what beliefs did it create for you. So for instance, because my mom was an alcoholic, I love my mom, because she was an alcoholic, one of the things she used to say repeatedly was, I was stupid. And I actually, that became a mindset belief, right? All the way up until I had to decide. So I was a teenage mom and I had to decide, where did I want to go? I mean, I was an adult after that, but I had to decide, where did I want to go with my life? I knew I had to change something because I only had a high school diploma, but I knew I needed to do something in order to advance myself. What was that? I was like, I need to go to college. But I was so afraid to go to college because I believed that I was stupid. Because of what the belief taught me. So that's where you had those limited beliefs, identifying those limited beliefs that was created out of that experience. You know, you're not going to have perfect parents. Perfection doesn't exist. You know, even if your mom was not an alcoholic and you grew up in a two-parent home that, you know, everybody was there, you're still going to have some things you're going to have to work out, right? But what I had to do was, you have to, with the inner part, you have to go, she did the best that she could with what she had. Forgiveness. So I had to forgive.
So the limiting belief really goes back to your childhood experiences. That was what was normalized for you. Even if it was bad, it was normalized for you. So you grew up hearing that. And afterwards, it wasn't something external. You internalized it. Now, when you get into adulthood, that feeling of I'm stupid, or that feeling of I'm a failure, or that feeling of I can never be loved, or that feeling of I could never make it in life. Limiting belief. Okay, so you work through to understanding that limiting belief.
Absolutely. What it produced from that experience, right? Then what you need to do again is forgive them. And then you need to forgive yourself.
That's a hard one. Forgiveness is we cutting deep now.
It's cutting really deep, but you know what I have learned through my healing process is when I begin to heal properly, I understood healing from that other, they were hurting. So before I was looking at it like, you know, from a hurt lens, but then when I began my own healing process, I understood. I'm very empathetic too, but I understood that they were hurting. It doesn't mean that it was okay for them to do the things that they did. Mm-hmm. You know, I made mistakes, and it doesn't mean that it's okay or, oh, I'm letting you off the hook, because a lot of people don't forgive because they feel like they're just getting away with it. It means that what you did to me won't control my life.
And it's interesting because forgiveness is not really for the other person. It's really for you. When you forgive somebody, it sets you free. The burden, because when you're stuck in that anger and that pain, each time you see that person, they steal joy away. You're the place, you're having fun, they show up and they walk around, all of a sudden you shut down. Or you are having fun, you're hanging out with your partner, everything's all good and you're just chilling, and the memory comes in and you just shut down, and it steals away joy. And more often people tend to think that forgiveness is, I have to feel it. I have to feel. But forgiveness really starts from making the decision to say, like you were saying, I won't let it control me.
Yes.
Start from there. Start from there. And that can get hard, but it is worth it.
And it's necessary.
It's necessary.
If you want to be on the other side, absolutely. If you want to be on the other side and living your best life, they living their best life. If you want to be on the other side living your best life, you're going to have to forgive.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, in my experience, the healing journey is different from the forgiveness journey.
Oh,
you know, just because, you know, a person, when we're in forgiveness or unforgiveness, it's an ought, even if it's with ourselves. So forgiveness is you have an ought. Someone offended you somehow, some way, even if you offended yourself. Well, you need to forgive that person for that offense.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean if I forgave you for that offense that I'm healed from the pain that it caused.
Okay. All right. So don't lump the two up. They're two different things. Just address them step by step or systematically looking at them. They play a part in how you show up in an adult relationship.
Absolutely.
I'm finding my limiting beliefs. I'm learning how to forgive. I'm separating my healing journey and the forgiveness. That's really attending to my growth as I show up in the relationship. Now, childhood trauma, it shows up in adult relationship. How does my partner begin to be a part of this healing journey? How does my partner become a part of this forgiveness? Do they just sit there and just wait for me to figure it out, or just be patient and sit there and just rub my hand and rub my back? How do they become a part of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I personally think your healing process is your healing process. Hmm. I do think you want to be honest with your significant other, your spouse or whatever. Like if you're married and you're starting to identify, you know, that you have these traumatic issues, you're not going to be like, I'm going to get divorced to heal, you know, to get better than I'm going to get married with you. So you have to do that independently. You know, a lot of times if you're in a significant relationship, they may not have caused your trauma. You know, they may not have caused your pain. So it's not fair for you to make them pay for it, right? You know, you were in a relationship with someone who cheated on you consistently. Now you're in a new relationship and now you're making that person pay for your past. That's not fair to them. Just like that was done previously, you're going to have to go on your own healing journey. Let your spouse know. Keep them open. Communication is very crucial in relationships. You know what? I recognize that the reason why I do A, B, and C is because in my childhood, this happened. So what I'm going to do is, you know, learn how to deal with this. So just be patient with me. Ask for patience. Be patient with me. You know, work with me. I'll communicate if I need to. Or even if you have communication issues, just let them know upfront, this is what I identify and this is the things I am going to work on. But you're going to have to go through that process, journey, with like a therapist or on your own and dealing with it. You're consistently will have those triggers come up. You just remember how you respond is really capturing where you are in the process.
When we really think about it, it means that trust is the one that begins to be eroded. There's an interesting phenomenon when people are dating, and if the wound or the trauma happened in the context of a close family member, when people are dating, the triggers are not as often. But the moment they get into a marriage or more into a committed relationship, it begins to now start to resemble that close family knit home. And then the triggers begin to come up. And sometimes people tend to think that, well, I was okay. It's them. And yet they don't realize that, okay, now because I'm committed, now we're in that family structure that where the wound or the trauma occurred, those triggers are going to come up. And the first thing that goes out the window is a trust. Can I trust this person? Because now you are attaching that trauma to this person. Can I trust them? And sometimes they didn't even do anything. Well, not that they didn't do anything, because...
But that's a good point. It's almost like you said, first, anytime you're bringing two people together in a union, you're going to have, I don't want to say issues. You're going to have to compromise in the sense that you have two people from two different worlds combining their world. To add trauma on top of that is even more challenging. It's another layer. Let's say you had an issue. You were molested when you were younger and, your husband is doing some inappropriate things. You could take that personal. Mm-hmm. Inappropriate things in your mind. Like maybe he's, I don't know, he could be talking to, his job is to talk to waitress or something at Hooters. Not to be, explicit, but it's just like, but you could feel offended by that because of your issues with your past. So and that's one of the things where you're making that person pay for your unhealed trauma, right? Mm.
It's interesting because in the context of even of sexual abuse or being molested in the adult relationship, when you're with your partner, it'll affect your sex life because it's not healed, it'll show up. It'll affect your finances because you won't trust. As this person looking up, are they trying to control me? Finances, yes. One of the big things. Are they trying to control? Are they trying to tell me what to do with my money, which is really your money because you're married? But that's a conversation for another day. Are they trying to tell me what to do with my money, with my time? And sometimes you may have some toxic friends who may not see the trauma that's happening in you. And they're saying, he did what? No, girl, don't even, bro, that's what she does. Oh man, but they don't see your trauma. They don't see you how you're hurting inside and how you're misdirecting all of that to the other person.
And that's a good point too. Who are your friends? Now you talked about it earlier, but people are going to tell you what to do in your relationship based on their experiences.
Yeah.
So, you got homegirl over here. She's been married 5 times, and she's trying to tell you how to run your marriage. Then you may want to consider someone else. And not to say that I'm not saying like I'm not judging her or anything like that.
Yeah. But learning, she may have other skills and strengths.
Yes.
We're together now. We're adults now. I want to make sure that I understand that this is my journey. I don't want to dismiss my partner. She needs to be a part of this journey, but she's not responsible for the journey. She will be there in this journey. So that means counseling too, together.
Oh yeah.
There's individual.
I want to take a step back when we're talking about dating. A lot of times when it comes to dating and we have this, like you said, some things are not, some things you don't know until you're with someone. But one of the things I will really, really recommend that people do is check themselves before they get committed to someone. Because a lot of times people get into a relationship hoping that other person can heal their trauma. Or they start trauma bonding with people. And then once the trauma is gone or once they've passed that point, they don't know why they're with that person. So I'm saying that because it's almost like a prerequisite, and you owe it to yourself and the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with to make sure that you're complete or whole. You know, you're not going to be perfect. So get that out your mind before you really start to like date. Because I see a lot of people date in the hopes that the other person will complete them. But like you said, when you get married, it amplifies those issues. Yeah. It really, really amplifies those issues. And then, you know, you up here arguing because the toilet paper is rolled the wrong way and the toothpaste isn't was from the bottom.
The but dishes really are on the side.
Right. But that's not the issue. So one of the things I highly recommend for people who are like in the adults and they're dating and they're trying to figure it out is to make sure that you are healed. Or, you know, I think healing is a process, you know, and then you always want to have different things to interrupt that healing. Like, again, I told you I just lost my mom. You know, my mom passed away in December. And so that's a whole nother healing journey. Thank you that I have to go on too, right? So you're going to have different things because that's life. But when you're broken, two broken people don't make a whole person, right? So when you're broken, you really want to get to a space where you're healed so that you can have a better relationship with someone. I spent years, I'm remarried, and I spent years initially, probably like 5 years, because I was so insecure because of what I went through with my first husband, just a lot of infidelity. We were young. I came from traumatic homes. So when I got remarried, that's why I'm saying you can't make the other person pay for your mistakes. It was a lot of insecurities, you know, who he talked to, where he going, because of what I went through before.
Trauma.
Absolutely. So I will really, really want people to understand the importance of healing yourself before entering people in your mess, to say it slightly.
So it's messed up when we say he or she completes me. I got to come complete. Because I'm not bringing 50% of me. I'm bringing a whole me. That whole me may be chipped and bruised here and there, but I'm bringing a whole me. So if I'm looking for somebody to complete me, subconsciously I'm telling myself they got to heal me. They got to carry my baggage. And that's unfair to the other person. Unfair to yourself too, because you're not going to grow.
Absolutely. And what happens in that regard is we have these expectations. And then when they're not met, we become disappointed, and then disappointment breeds resentment and bitterness. Yeah. So then we're hating them 5 years from now because, you know, you put the expectation on them to heal you and be your, you know, I don't know, your end all to everything, right?
Yeah.
So that is kind of why we see a lot of people in the cycle of relationships, because of their expectations of the other person.
So that means too that the person who is hurt or traumatized will begin to blame the other person that they didn't support them or were not there for them. And yet really it wasn't for them. It was for them to go through the process of healing alone and for the other person just to be a sideliner. I know they talk about the nervous system, how it balances each other off. If somebody's anxious and the other person is anxious, you all get anxious, amped up. But if somebody is calm, and the other person is anxious, it kind of helps out. When a little kid is crying and they come to you, daddy, and you hold them and they calm down too. But the healing is not for me. It is for my daughter to heal. So we put on a whole lot of things on each other and we expect them to be delivered. If they don't get done, we break up. Healing, is healing a straight line? Like I'm going 10, 20, 30, 50, and I'm at 100. I keep going up. Is that a straight line?
Oh, no. Healing is not a straight line at all. And then, like I said, as life happens, you're going to continue to have situations. The goal is to like acknowledge that you need healing, acknowledge that it's a choice to heal. I choose to heal from this situation and then begin that process. And then you can start off by doing those things, the inner work, the forgiveness and all that stuff. You're going to, you know, when you decide to heal and forgive, you may feel a little, you know, sting, you know, in situations may hurt a little bit, but the goal is to continue to choose to heal. It's a choice to choose to heal. And then you choose by, you know, acknowledging that this happened and it hurt, but I'm not going to respond or react. Cause a lot of times we react and not respond. I'm not going to respond this way. So although this hurt me, I'm not going to respond and just, you know, cuss you out or flip out. I am just going to choose to heal and I'm going to respond this way.
So choosing to healing, for some people, it looks like journaling. For some people, it looks like going to therapy. For some people, it looks like being vulnerable and saying, hey, you know what? I got this stuff in my past. It's messed up. It hurts, just so you know. So choosing to heal looks differently for different people, but it has tangible steps that one has. You can't choose to heal and just sit.
Absolutely. It's like you said, there's things you have to do, the inner work that you have to do. It's okay to acknowledge it, but then you don't have to, if someone hurts you, you know, on the road, you don't have to chase them down, right? Because you have road rage. You can choose to say, you know what? That person may be having a bad day. Because a lot of times, if you ever read the Four Agreements, he said, don't take anything personal. A lot of times, you know, people are doing things not really at you, although it feels very personal. Yeah. They're doing it because of their own issues, right? But then when you decide to take their issues and kind of respond, and I'm not saying be a doormat and just let people walk all over you. But what I'm saying a lot of times is, you know, you begin, they cut you off and you chase them. That becomes a you issue. Right.
That's
and
true.
That's where you have to decide to choose or react differently.
Choose healing. Dr. Jones, I know we can go on and on about this topic. There's a lot that we could talk about here. But I know you're doing some stuff. You're out there. Where can people find you? What are you up to? What's going on in your world?
Yeah, so you can reach me. I am on Facebook and the gram at Janelle Jones and Powers. And then what I'm doing, I kind of have a lot of stuff going on. So I'm doing a book anthology right now. We have 10 authors who are writing a book about overcoming teenage pregnancy. So that'll be out in October. I'm super excited about that. So just wanted to give people an opportunity to understand that, you know, teenage pregnancy, you know, it's challenging, but you don't have to be stuck in this kind of cultural poverty and you can actually, you know, up-level your life. That's one thing I'm working on. And then I'm doing another anthology for women who's had some parenting issues, how they overcame those parenting issues, just any type of challenging. That's going to be coming out at the end of the year.
All right. Janelle Jones Empowers. Well, folks, thank you so much, Janelle, for coming through. This is another episode of Relationship Factor. As always, if you like the episode, go ahead and like, follow, share it with somebody, talk with somebody. Hey, and if you haven't downloaded an episode yet, go ahead and check it out and check out another episode. Another episode of Relationship Factor. Don't forget to check out more of this episode. Go to our relationshipfactor.org. It's a wrap. Thank you, Dr. Jones.